Today's episode is the very first interview of 2025, and I am so honored to be joined by Dr. Michelle Barr. We had such a fantastic conversation. The energy just flowed throughout, and we agreed on so many different facets of spirituality and how to live your life. Michelle is an amazing person, mom, lives in Texas, and 15 years ago, she left therapy behind to focus on her own healing and wellness center in her community that turned into a global online business. And she founded the Barr Institute, and her goal is to help others personally and professionally to heal and transform in all areas of their lives, and then help others go on and do the same. And she and her husband have been married for over 30 years. They have a son, two daughters, their first grandbaby, and she has a summer residence in Lilydale, New York, which she talked about on this episode. I had never heard of this place before, but apparently it is a vortex for spiritual healing energy, so you have to learn a little bit more about it. She talks about her past as a specialist in crisis and trauma, addiction and abuse and generational dysfunctions, and then how she moved into personal growth and development. It's an incredibly interesting story that I feel like so many of us can relate to, from the sense that you started in this sense of trauma and then you moved into this place of triumph after helping others, because most of us are here to help serve in some way or another, and then finding your passion and building a business out of it. This was a super inspiring episode. I'm so excited to hear what you think. Let's get into it.
Welcome to Kylie Says It's About to Get Real. I chose the name of this podcast after most of my friends would say, "Shit Kylie says," after I'd share a deep thought or perspective on something that always ended in more conversations. I started this podcast out of a period of spiritual curiosity that caused me to do deep dives into manifestation, meditation, and mindset and perception work that had me exploring things like angel numbers, life path numbers, human design, mediumship, Akashic records researching, and more, all while overcoming a traumatic eating disorder and trying to thrive as a postpartum mom of two while building my corporate career. This show is a mix of guest interviews and my take on life, love, friendship, and all of the topics that I find interesting. Here, we talk to experts, authors, entrepreneurs, and more. If you're looking for a show to get you out of your rut, you found it. Welcome to Kylie Says. I'm your host, Kylie, and I promise to entertain you, give it to you straight, be real with you, and have some fun along the way.
Okay. Well, Michelle, thank you so much for joining Kylie Says. I'm so excited to have you here.
I'm so glad to be here. I'm excited to talk with you today.
Same. So let's kick off. Can you just tell us a little bit about you? Who are you? Who should the audience know about you?
Things to know about me. I really believe for a long time I've been on a personal growth and spiritual journey that has integrated the way I'm in the world personally and professionally, and the whole business that I've created. I'm a spiritual business entrepreneur, and my business has grown and evolved always with my own journey. So it started with a very personal journey. It started with some crisis early in my life, and then doing the inner work to become more of who I really am and to understand that better. So I have created a coaching business. I'm an author, I'm a speaker, but I've worked a lot on myself and then help other people to create what they really desire and become who they feel they're meant to be.
Amazing. Let's go back to the beginning a little bit. Can you tell us about your childhood? What was your upbringing like?
My upbringing, I am very aware now. I was a therapist. I'm a former therapist. And so I dove into all that for myself as well. And there were a lot of issues around my value. It's so funny. I like to tell about, I was born into a family of all athletes, professional athletes. And I am the intuitive dreamer, writer, not physical, not even really all in my body. And so early on, I got messages about what I had was not valuable, and what I didn't have is what was valuable. And so it played out a lot in my early life as I tried to find my place and all of that. And I really was in a family of people who were very physical and grounded, and they did not understand me well at all. And so it set off a lot of soul searching early on and trying to find my place.
Mm-hmm. How did that translate to you raising your own kids and instilling what was valuable to them? You mentioned you have three kids, so I assume that you did some work figuring out what that looks like.
I have a son and two daughters, and my son is from a first marriage. I got into a young marriage, a very toxic marriage. I was married to a drug addict that I was trying to save and rescue, and played out the whole cycle of codependent addict until I learned better about that. And so my early life with my first child, my son, was pretty traumatic. And as I was finding myself, I had him at 23. Then I left that marriage at 25. Then I was a single mother. Then I got into a second marriage and I'm still married. We just celebrated 33 years and I had two daughters. So I had to learn a lot. The biggest thing that I learned that I talk about in my work is I had to learn, even though I wasn't going to stay in that marriage, how to heal what was going on so I didn't just repeat it. So my husband and I, we have our own issues, but I didn't step back in and repeat that.
That must have taken a lot of work to figure out what those patterns were. For anyone who finds themselves in a similar situation, what were some of those things that you uncovered that you had to work through from that early trauma in your relationship?
I believe that every crisis has a spiritual component, whether people even say they believe in God or any kind of higher power or any of that. And so for me, the opportunities that came in for that growth, I had to see them for what they were. I ended up in a very early spiritual awakening because at the same time I was in that marriage and maybe leaving it, my best friend was dying, but that was a catalyst for me to think about what is life, what is death, what happens, and so really navigating all of that. And then I had did my own therapy, and then I was working with death and dying with my friend. So it was a culmination of all those things at a young age of what's the meaning of all this? And it really propelled me pretty fast into a spiritual awakening.
So what did your spiritual awakening look like for you? What teachers did you turn to? What practices really felt like they resonated for you?
Something that I told my kids later on in life was that until you're at the age of 25, they've proven now their brain changes, especially, and changes in your body, and just all of that. Where you don't fully know who you are. And so it was like I woke up at 25 and I was looking, what is this life? I had financial trouble, marriage trouble. I was a young mother. I felt out of control. I didn't love my life. I didn't love my job. I was just ticking the boxes and doing the things. So once I realized that, I believe the universe starts sending teachers in. And so, first, it was subtle things in spirituality, Abraham teachings, Esther Hicks. I really immersed myself in all of that. And I came from not a fundamental religious background, but I was in the church and I had a spiritual seeking background always, and also did ministerial work. So all of that coming together, I started feeling there's more than just this. And so all the books, all the way back to Wayne Dyer and Shakti Gawain and Melody Beattie and all of those, and all the Hay House, Louise Hay, all of that, because I went to a Louise Hay event. And all of her people who are the authors and the spiritual teachers, they all come from science and medical backgrounds. And here I was, a therapist, saying, there's all this stuff that works that I can't do under my license. And I really saw that spiritual component, and my intuitive gifts were opening. So I have been on a journey since the age of 25 into all of the spirituality.
I'm actually rereading, I think, The Power of Awakening by Wayne Dyer right now as my first book for 2025.
That is great. Yeah, his teachings were so powerful.
And Hay House for me has also been like, I feel like those were brought into my life without me necessarily searching for them. I use Kindle unlimited as like my way to kind of find new things so that I can read on the go. But it seems like the right things always kind of come to me. But I also, in my personal kind of spiritual awakening, I found a lot of angel number consistency, especially already in the new year. What sort of like trends or patterns did you find to reaffirm to yourself, okay, I think I'm on the right path?
I love that you're bringing that up because I do believe also, and I tell people, once you're open to it, pay attention. Books, teachers, people, messages, opportunities will cross your path and find you, and you just have to see those opportunities. I'm a big one with angel numbers. When I started seeing synchronicities of all kinds, that there are no coincidences. And so that trend of angel numbers, it's always there. All of a sudden, people realize I'm seeing 1111, 333. What do those mean? And when you pay attention to them, you let the universe speak to you. And so I believe that the new trend I'm seeing, and I've really been into some Dr. Joe Dispenza the past few years, is now science is catching up with what I already believed. I just didn't need science to explain it, but this whole connection with the brain and then working in the unknown in the field. And so I understand better why my brain played out those patterns and why I was doing those things like, this isn't good for me. Why am I stuck in this? And playing out childhood patterns, all what I call your mommy and daddy stuff, all your stuff that comes up when you go to create success. So that is one of the areas I've really been working with because your brain does these things for survival, but you've got to be aware you can't count on them to move you forward.
What are some practices or I guess like patterns or daily rituals that you do now to kind of help ensure that you're still receiving those messages after you've gone through all these years of training and helping others? Is there something that you swear by?
One, like what you're doing, I'm always absorbing, I'm always feeding myself and pouring it into myself. I'll do little workshops or I'll be reading or listening on Audible. I'm always, my car is a rolling library, especially on road trips. And so pouring into you, I mean, you can go now on YouTube and just watch Esther Hicks' Abraham rants and feed yourself all of that. And then the other is always reconnecting spiritually with myself and with how I experience spirit and the universe. And so in whatever ways, I'm not a big sit for long periods of time and meditate, but I'm very mindful. I do conscious dance, which I love because it's movement. There's transcend dance, there's Nia, there are all these different conscious dance movement where you really get in your body and you allow your spirit to come through. And so I do that kind of healing dance and then just really bringing myself present and mindful, walking, movement, any of that. I've always loved yoga. I come and go from yoga and all those things. So finding something, whether you can sit and meditate or do moving meditation, and then really making time for making that a priority. I also always schedule spiritual retreats. I'm watching right now for one to come across to me that'll be for this year. I always go on at least one spiritual retreat.
Do you host spiritual retreats?
I do sometimes. Right before COVID in 2020, I was doing one in Dallas every year, bringing together like emerging spiritual leaders and messengers and people who were coming into their own that way. And so that is something that I love to do and would like to do more of again.
Okay, so you talked a little bit about your childhood and feeling like you were in this place of maybe not necessarily fitting in, and then it led you to mental health studies. What did your early career look like when you were dealing with some of that trauma and you were a therapist and you were leading mental health research? Like, what did that look like?
When my best friend was dying, and so I live in Dallas, and I went from Dallas to San Antonio to spend time with him. And what he had was AIDS, but this was before we even knew what AIDS was. So he was sick and dying. His partner passed away. And then I started losing other young friends to AIDS. And interesting enough, in the community where he lived, they had started a Louise Hay healing circle. And so I started going to that, and that's how I got exposed to that. And during that time, I was doing all this volunteer work in that area, and I was actually working in publishing, advertising, marketing. And I decided to go and get my master's degree. And I felt like I've always identified as a helper and healer. And that was the traditional route that I knew to take. So I went to graduate school. I was coming out of that marriage and looking for something new. I ended up not going back to Dallas because then I met my current husband in San Antonio. And I was able to spend a lot of time with my friend before he died. And that catalyst was I went to graduate school and then I got my first job out of graduate school running domestic violence shelters, sexual assault. And a lot of that was working with addiction and generational dysfunction. So my specialty became generational dysfunction and trauma. And I was just fascinated by those patterns. And I was doing it through that lens of violence and addiction. I had a whole practice of adults who were abused as children, sexually, physically, emotionally. And then from there, I did that for a long time. We moved around some in several different places. And then I was working in a psychiatric hospital, and I was really getting to see all the textbook cases. And I saw that fine line between spiritual and mental and emotional and mental health and the biological components. And one thing I saw was I was not able to minister to people's spiritual journey. So I actually was called into seminary and I went to seminary and I came out and became a hospital chaplain. And where I am now, 16 years ago, I came out of my mental health license and I took therapist, chaplain and coach, and I created my own business so that I could use all the things I know that work, which include a lot of alternatives that you can't do under a license.
Can you tell us more about what your business looks like today?
My business today, it's even grown and evolved with me. I started my business. I can help and heal anyone who's wanting success and has these patterns playing out. A lot of therapeutic and people with a wide variety of issues. But I found I have an entrepreneurial spirit and I love working with entrepreneurs and especially women entrepreneurs. And in my own, I haven't been without a coach since 2009. So I use coaches to help me see my stuff and work through it when I get stuck. And so I do the same. So I love working with people who feel they have a message. They're the helpers and healers. They don't know how to make money. They don't know how to work through their issues and they self-sabotage and they play out these patterns. And helping them. One day we're working on business strategy, and the next day we're diving deep when you were 3 years old, and now you're playing this out. They'll come to me to build their business, and then it's like, oh, what you really need is to be leaving your marriage or all of it. It's so holistic and so integrated. And that's what I love doing. I help my clients write their books and build their businesses and do all those things. But what I help them the most is to become their highest potential by reconnecting to their desires and learning manifestation and working through their own inner work and understanding why they're self-sabotaging.
I'm a chronic self-sabotager, so perhaps I need to hire you as my coach because that is something I have consistently dealt with. What are some of the themes that you see across your clients?
The themes I see, one, because this was my own issue. So once I worked on it, was what I have doesn't have value. What I have, nobody would pay for. Or who am I to write a book? Or who am I? And yet I'll say, what are your desires? I now 100% trust your desires. And when I start working with somebody, I'll always first go to your desires, because wherever there's a desire, a way has already been made and your soul is speaking to you. But people say, I see myself on stage. I see myself with a book. I'm helping people. Then they can't get past, how would I do it? Who am I to do it? Who would pay me? A lot of helpers and healers have the classic that I did, not being able to charge to help people, not being able to accept money and charge what we're worth. But once you're running a business, mine was a very expensive hobby at first. So I see a lot of that around value. I've identified we all have just one or two really core issues that play out. So it's either I'm not good enough. Or another example is you were raised in an environment that you took on energetically, even if you didn't fully understand it with language, where you and your family and your generations either lived, and your cultures and communities, not enough, just enough, or more than enough. So for instance, my family always lived just enough, but you got to really struggle and suffer, and then it comes in at the last minute, in the midnight hour when you're on your knees, and then it shows up, and then you'll just replay those things. You'll play them over and over and over again. So identifying whether you came from not enough, just enough, and then switching that to more than enough.
And you created this institute named the Michelle Barr Institute. And do you practice all of these different philosophies within your institute, or what does that look like? Can you tell us a bit about how did you found this? What were the principles in which you were hoping to kind of heal people through your institute? I'd love to learn a little bit more about that.
It has grown and evolved because the therapeutic and then the spiritual and then even the entrepreneurial. And so I always am coming in that you are unique, you have desires, you have a highest potential you can fulfill and a mission. And when you can live that, your whole life will be better blessed. So I work with a lot of clients privately. So what that looks like is we work together within a container of 3 months, 6 months, a year, whatever we contract with that. And during that time, I bring all of it to the table. So during that time, we're working on everything because it's energetic and you're uncovering and growing and evolving, and then you're going in the world and playing it out. So I can't tell you, well, in 3 weeks, we're going to be doing this. Mm-hmm. And so I use all of the pieces I do bring. And then I'm always growing and evolving and studying and doing my own work. And then every time I learn something, I turn around and bring it back to my community and my clients. So nothing is off the table. We go deep and we go into all of that. But the difference from therapy, in therapy, sometimes it's about going back to the beginning and you were born and your childhood and all those things. But then I would have clients who would come for therapy for a year or years, and there's a place for that. But one of my specialties is moving people forward and learning how to take inspired, aligned action. And so I only want to go into the past as it's playing out in the now. And I don't want you staying in it. And I don't want you telling those emotionally charged stories over and over. So another thing we have to do is really see what stories you're telling that then you have to live. Whatever you say is. So then you have to live those stories, and we got to break that and tell new stories.
I love that you said that, because I think even for me, that's a lot of the reason why I don't want to continue therapy. I've done a lot of the internal work to move past some of the things that have been identified or brought up. And because I've done so much of the work in the present and focusing on, okay, this is a pattern and here's how I want to move forward, it does become more painful to then say, let's go back. And I can see the value in saying, where are you at today and what things are coming up, or how are you seeing a pattern in your life that's holding you back? And instead of saying, let's begin at, I don't know, age 3, how has that manifested in other parts of your life, in other jobs, in other relationships? Because then it's almost like the aha for a client, where they can then see, I guess that is a pattern. I didn't realize that. Where does that come from? And then you explore, so it feels new, not like something they've just consistently been trying to avoid. Because I feel like avoidance is probably one of the main reasons why people start and then stop therapy. Have you encountered that at all?
Yes, a lot, because you get into that place that's painful or scary, and then people don't want to go there. And that's another reason I love what you say about it. You're very right on that. It's so much more powerful that whatever is playing out that is making me unhappy or discontent or restless or any of that now, whenever I'm creating what I don't want, it's because I'm playing something out that's unhealed, unresolved. And I need to heal and resolve it so I can move forward. So that gives me more motivation to work through it, because on the other side of it is everything I want. And it's actually the key showing me what I'm playing out. And so it is, it's patterns, and you're playing it out as a default, and you're having to learn in the moment to change it. And so it's very different from just, what's everything wrong in my life since I was born? And I've been doing this long enough now because as a therapist, I had the generational dysfunction and trauma as a part of my specialty. And I carried that over into the coaching and the intuitive work and all of that, the healing work. And one of the things I study is family constellations, which really brings all that together, where we're playing out even generations of things we picked up, and to be loyal to the family system because we're programmed, that's how we can survive and not die. We carry these things on. And once you see it, it can shift in an instant and stop. Without involving my mother, I have healed things with my husband that then have changed between my mother and I, because I was trying to play out my issues with her that were unhealed and unresolved with him. I was just making him play it out. So it's fascinating. And then you ask about the children. Once my children started dating and marrying, and I would see when they were upset with their partners, when they would tell me what it was, I would see it was unhealed, unresolved stuff that I'm playing out with them. And when I would heal it with them, their partners would stop doing it. It's fascinating, and it's always right.
That brings up an interesting topic about, you see in a ton of TV shows where it's a parent will say, are we going to mess up our kids the same way that our parents messed up us up? And overwhelmingly the shows will say like, well, yeah, of course. And nowadays we're in this gentle parenting phase, and this, it's different than how I grew up,
Me
where
too.
we would get, if we were in trouble, the wooden spoon would come out and we wouldn't necessarily get hit with it, but it would be like, I could do this if I wanted to. Where now, like, you would never, I mean, I'm sure it still happens, but among my friend group who are parents, we would never use that as a tool to influence our child to make a decision one way or another. So how do you, as a well-meaning person who has this spiritual awakening of sorts, help influence your children to not have some of those dispositions that you are still carrying as a wounded adult?
My children are starting to have children. I have three grandchildren. And so it's funny because, keeping it light, on one hand, I tell them, no matter what you do and what you do different from me, you're going to screw up your kids and they're going to tell you. So here I was, so adamant about not repeating what I felt like my parents and family did to me. And yet now my kids are, my youngest just turned 30. So through their late 20s and early 30s, their own issues started emerging. And sometimes they would shock me, because then I was like, I did everything to make that not happen, and I've still messed you up in your perception and mind. So it does happen. It's just part of it. One of the things, I don't know if you're familiar with Ho'oponopono, but it is a clearing and healing tool. It's a Hawaiian prayer. I learned about it from the book Zero Limits. So I tell everyone, and Dr. Joe Vitale, who was also in The Secret. But it is where I can't make my children think differently. I can't fix whatever I did to them. So it gives me the ability, whatever is in me that is needing this to play out with you. That's all I can heal. And it is a four-phrase prayer. I love you. I'm sorry. Please forgive me. Thank you. But what you're doing is you're healing it in yourself from the belief that if it's showing up in your world in some way, you need it to. And so when I get in that place with my kids of like, I wish you didn't feel and believe that. And did I mess you up? And especially my son, I could have so much guilt in those early years. And I've really learned when I know better, I do better. But all I can do is clear and heal in me. And yes, they're going to have things in there. In my best efforts to not repeat, I did other things. Mm-hmm. And I was a young parent. So
what has been something that you've manifested for yourself that you didn't even think was possible when you first started out on this journey?
Well, one is the life and the business that I have now, because I kept feeling spirit and the desire and leading me saying, go on your own, do this thing. And I kept saying, what is even this thing? And so it started with having money freedom and the freedom to do what I'm made to do and not have to do other things. And it was in increments. There were struggles, and then I would go for this goal and then this goal and creating this life, but also healing my marriage and healing relationships and friendships. And then even things I use manifesting, I just manifested because I started feeling a desire. I'm not supposed to be living where I'm living. I don't know what's trying to happen right now. So I'm going to open up to it. And I want a bigger house because now I have three children, and we had moved at the beginning of COVID just into a little lock and leave. So I trust those desires now. And I told my husband, we're moving. We're leaving this house. I don't know what's happening yet. I don't know how. And he wants to get logical and practical. And I hate moving. And why would we do it? And I told him that last April. And by October, we had moved into our new home, double the space, 5 miles from my newest grandbaby. And it just happened with ease because I say, I don't let my mind go. You can't do that. That'd be expensive. It'd be a hassle. I just said, I feel it. I trust my desires. What is trying to happen here? And then it all came together in just months. And now all these things are unfolding, other reasons why I've moved to this area that are gifts. But see, our mind gets too in the way and wants to explain it or say why we can't do it. And I have just learned, my husband, after 33 years, is learning when I say we're doing something, it's going to happen. So I've used it for everything, mostly lifestyle, for my business, for like this new move and this home. And it's just trusting your desires. Do people trust their desires, and are they willing to open up and follow what the universe is calling you toward?
And how, for someone who's a beginner, would you listen to this knowing or this push? Like, what does that sound like? Do you hear it? Do you see a sign? Is it like, oh, I got a postcard in the mail and it's Florida, we're going to Florida? Like, what would that look like?
Because it can look like different things. It's all of the things you just said. It's paying attention to you instead of the brain and the voice that's trying to save you from change. Because all the brain knows is whatever you're doing now, you're surviving. And it's going to try to save you so that you can just keep living. So here's what's so crazy that I learned. The brain will let you continue to do things that are not good for you and even dangerous, because you already know how to survive them. And I was like, my brain lies to me, and my brain is doing things. I tell people now, I don't let my brain make any decisions. My mind makes no decisions for me, and people get very confused. And I said, it's like letting a 2-year-old or a 5-year-old run your life or your business. You give it tasks, but your mind, people think they are their mind. So one is, a good book for this is The Untethered Soul. It took me a minute. The Untethered Soul. because he tells you how you are not your mind, you're separate from your mind. Then, like you said, some people hear it, some people see it, some people are getting hit over the head with it, and they're still not getting it. And so if the first thing I would tell people to do is to tap into your desires, what you truly desire. That means not what others want and need from you, expect from you, not what you think you can have. What do you truly desire? And starting there. And then there's a whole process of learning to get the inspiration and take inspired action. The one thing I've learned the most is every time I had a desire, there was an inspired action sitting right there. And here's the problem, and you'll know. They're inconvenient, they're uncomfortable, they're illogical, they're expensive, they're all of that, because if you were already a match to it, you would already have it. You're becoming a match to it. And so it will stretch and grow you, but I've come to trust that. And so people don't see the opportunities or they don't take them. And until you do, you can't have what you want. So it's really that taking inspired action, but it starts with your desires and getting your mind out of the way.
I totally agree. I think that the desires part for me would honestly be the hardest to say, because I know if I were asked, not in a setting like this, it would be easy for me to just name a few things off. But when you actually have to think about it, what are the things that only I desire? Not something I was told growing up, like, of course you go to college after high school. Of course you go to a corporate job. Like, those were things that were innately kind of just pushed to me. But when you think about a desire, it can feel scary because it might be out of the path or out of the realm of possibilities that you were told could exist in making money, in being successful. Even what a success look like, I'm sure across all of your clients looks so different because everyone's desires are different. But at the end of it, I feel like some of it comes down to just worth. Do you feel worthy of that desire? And if not, like, what is that telling about you and your mindset, and how do you move past it?
You bring up a great point, because if you think about it, even going to our desires, and somebody goes, okay, I'll take the first step, I'll tap into my desires, but they're still weighing most of the time. Oh, there's a desire, but wait, I can't have that desire. My husband, my children, my boss, my job, my money. I believe now that whatever you desire, if you put your highest good and your desires first, everyone else in your life would benefit. That doesn't mean some people won't buck up against you at first, but then we put it down because we say, well, I couldn't possibly because of all the other people and all the other reasons. Main things, big things my clients do is in a very short time, they move to their dream locations, they quit their jobs, some of them faster or slower. I had one woman a few years ago in 90 days, quit her job, moved to her dream location in Florida, started her new business. And then everything in her life started going right. She was like, I don't love what I'm doing. I don't love living in the snow, but I couldn't possibly do this. And in 90 days, she did it. It does not take long, and the universe will support you once you say what you want.
Have you found out what your manifestation technique is? For me, I also dabble in human design. And one thing that I found out about myself is that I need to be very specific in my manifestations to get clear. Okay, if you want a new house, what does it look like? What color is it? What does the landscaping look like? And that can be difficult for people to figure out. Okay, if I just say I want a new house, like, great, it should come. Have you found that specificity is important for people as they're trying to manifest things? Or I assume obviously that can go here or there, but what is your philosophy when it comes to specificity and manifestation?
I've been all over that scale, you know, if you look at it as a scale, and now I've learned more, the more I can just say the essence of what I want. Like with this house, I knew what I wanted around it, but I had no idea the house, and then the house found me. But I love what you're saying because I use human design as a tool. Those are all tools that help me understand myself better. And we are wired then to manifest differently when you can understand your human design, your Enneagram, your Myers-Briggs, any of those things. And I tend to use a lot of the real intuitive and metaphysical tools like human design. I mean, it's can change your life. And so you may find that works really well for you, but I find sometimes if you're too specific, unless you know why you're wanting or needing to be that specific, the universe is over here. Well, I had this for you, but if you only want this, I'm trying to give you this. So one way I've worked with that is, and I've done this with houses especially, but other things, this or something better. I'll have a picture of the house that I want. Then I'll say, thank you for this or something better, which means either give me this, or if you know there's something better, bring me the something better. And that works well. So I have tended not to get as specific, but I'm all about creating the lifestyle at this point I want to live. So I try to get more into the essence of it. But I've also used manifesting for very specific amounts of money for very specific things. So you kind of play with when to be specific and when to be in the essence. But there is power in the essence, in
I
the
agree.
unknown.
I think what you said, this or something better, is actually a great way to bring something to life for yourself through manifestation. I early on in my journey, one of the podcasts I was listening to said, just manifest a cup of coffee. It sounds hard, but it's really easy. This happened for me the next day. And then I got stuck on, well, it should happen for me pretty fast, right? I go get coffee all the time. And I think it took me months until I was in the Starbucks drive-through and I was passing through. I had let someone go in front of me who kind of like was veering in, and I was just, no, go ahead, you're clearly in a hurry. Like, didn't make a big deal out of it, where I could have honked or something, just let him go. And then as I'm getting to the front to pay, oh, that person in front of you paid for your coffee. And I was like, oh
The
wow, okay.
inspired action. You allowed an opportunity to show up. And I would say, we would dig into it, but I would say for one, you heard it and then you attach to it, not detachment from the outcome. Because that's another big one that I've had to learn. Oh, I want to create the cup of coffee. And then you're like, well, I should be able to get it the next day. And why is it not here? And why can't I do it? You have to detach from the outcome, which seems counterintuitive. But the things that come to me the fastest and easiest are when I say, that would be great to have. And if I don't get it, I don't care. And I'm fine. And everybody's fine. And then those things show up like I'm sitting here trying, I need money to pay bills. And then, oh, I'd love to take my family on a $10,000 cruise. Then the $10,000 comes in, but not the $500 to pay my electric bill. It's just, I've done it enough now. I turned my whole life into an experiment for the law of attraction. So those are the nuances. Once I learn the basics, it's what you're saying right there. There's so many nuances to manifesting in the law of attraction that you have to learn to really work with it consistently.
Totally. And I think it has to come from a place of non-desperation,
It
because
has to.
the
It's not from
desperation.
scarcity or lack. You can't create, I really need this. I have to have this. Yes, or attachment to the outcome.
I found that the most eye-opening things that I've brought to the table has been when I've asked like my spirit guide team, if you can hear me, then show me a butterfly. And my daughter has a lifelong autoimmune disorder, or well, a disease. And so we were at Stanford or Oakland Children's Hospital shortly after her diagnosis, and I had recently asked my spirit guides for some sort of a sign, and I wanted a butterfly just so that I would know it was the fall, so we weren't seeing many butterflies, and I hadn't seen one, but I knew it, I'm sure it'll come to me. And as we're walking out of the hospital, I'm trying to keep my daughter entertained. Oh, hey, look at this beautiful thing that they have on the ceiling, and it was paper mache or something, and it covered the entire ceiling. And we were wondering, what is that? Can you tell? And kind of making jokes at each other. I think it's this. And it took me until we got into the elevator to realize, oh my God, it was a butterfly.
Those are the things. I love those things.
And so that asking my spirit team to show me a sign or a dragonfly or something, reading a book with my kids. We haven't read this book in a year. Third page, the word dragonfly. And I'm like, what are the chances that the
Right.
book would just have the word dragonfly, a random creature? It's and that I've been trying to teach even some of my friends who are like, I need some hope or I need some this. And I'm like, just ask for something small, but then pay attention to it. And know that that's you, that that's your answer coming to you, and then use it for bigger things. Like, how have you, I guess, what's your philosophy on like starting small so that you can learn to trust your gut? Because you talked about intuitiveness. How do you teach someone to listen to that intuitiveness?
To me, it's kind of like what you're saying, and it goes back to whatever's the most emotionally charged will win. So I can say, oh, I want that new car. I know I can have it. I can even say, there's no reason I'm worthy. There's no reason not to have it. And I throw that out there, and then you shouldn't have a car like that. That's irresponsible. Don't spend the money on that. Whatever it is, whatever is most highly charged. So for me, I tell people, whether it's a big or small thing, don't start with your biggest unhealed, unresolved trauma. Don't start with the most highly charged, triggering things, because you've really got to learn to work with your emotional management, your energy management, and your emotional regulation. And so it's more that. And I agree, I've heard that about start with small things. Start with a cup of coffee or anything like that. So for me, it's don't go for the biggest things that you're most attached to that have to happen. But I've also seen people just really get in the flow and in alignment and bring in big things once they learn how it all works.
I want to switch gears just slightly because I'm interested in your take. Having seen and worked with so many people who have undergone trauma of physical, sexual, emotional abuse, what are your thoughts on people still being good and this collective consciousness that can ideally raise everyone up? Do you still believe that all people are good, even if they've inflicted pain on others?
I do, and it's hard to say. When I worked in victim services and I started forming these beliefs, you don't ever want to say to a victim you had any role in what happened to you, or then people will really come at you like, oh, did I invite that? But I think it's on a much bigger scale that when we're up there, we're planning the roles we're going to play. And even when I'm around people that I get into conflict with, I believe up there, we said, when we come down here, we're going to play these things out. And the more I can take responsibility, that doesn't mean I let people off the hook when they do bad things. And I believe there's a lot of generational trauma that causes evil or causes people, because just the whole victim cycle, for one, if you're in severe domestic violence, you usually either become the abused or the abuser. And there are so many complex reasons for that. I also believe there are chemical imbalances and there are reasons why some people really do what we say are evil things. So it gets really complex. But as I try to live it, unpack it every day, I believe there's a tipping point, and we keep getting closer and closer in the collective conscious to the tipping point. And I believe everything like the election, what's going on in the world, all of this we're going through is part of it, and it's all opportunities, and nothing is planned all the way out. In every moment, there's a choice point, and we're energetically shifting all of it. And so I believe it takes a tipping point of enough people in one energy or direction, and that either one, like for instance, whichever way the election went, we decided as a collective with our energies, and now it's going to go down the path. But I don't believe it's like now we lost everything or now we get everything. I don't believe it works that way. So I still believe we're all on this journey collectively and individually, and we all have free will and a choice point in every moment. And it's a tapestry, and all our energies come together. So all I can do is keep adding my energy to it I also believe I take a really hard stand that if everybody would stop pointing at everything wrong in the world and what everybody else is doing and not doing, if every single person would work on themselves, the whole world would change.
And that comes back to me to this detachment. It's like in Wayne Dyer's book, you have to be able to see that the situation around you or how you're responding to it or how someone is saying someone's being mean to me. Okay, well, that is really on them and what they must be going through. And I choose to respond with kindness. And I found that in my day-to-day, especially commuting on one of our transit hour plus long commute in the Bay Area packed with people, that it can make or break my morning based on how I choose to see all of the strange things happening on the train and how people are interacting with me. And after I got what I considered one of my dream jobs recently, the first thing I saw as I got off that train, the building number was 333. And I was like, okay. And then the building around the corner, 555, on my walk to work. And I was like, okay, this was the right move. It was hard to make that decision. And I purposefully said, I'm going to start the day positive. Whatever happens to me, I'll smile through it. Even if someone bumps me, I drop my coffee, I spill on my clothes. And I think that those small decisions and that detachment, as you were talking about, plays a huge role in us.
And then you're getting
shifting signs. Mm-hmm.
You brought up another thing. I reference a lot of books because they've all been instrumental in the four agreements, the book, The Four Agreements. And one of the agreements is whatever other people think of me is none of my business. And it's never about me anyway. That one has saved my life because I used to get super caught up in being, one of my stories was I'm misunderstood, I'm undervalued. And once you realize that, again, it's so freeing.
I could not agree more. I think having started a new role recently that I considered as my dream role, there have been some of these experiences that have made me now start questioning, am I worthy of this role? Do I belong here? Do people see me as valuable? And it actually took me back to a place in high school where I was feeling insecure and like, do people understand me? I have so much to give and this and that. And I think this winter break came at the perfect time for me to kind of reassess. I am the only one creating that narrative. No one else thinks that, feels that. I am creating it out of a place of lack. And so I need to go back into this next week or however and know what I bring to the table. And I think that that can be a very hard thing to do, is to detach from everyone must think this about me, because those are the stories you've told.
The stories you're telling, if you can shift the stories you're telling, because they're so emotionally charged. So you've got to really learn, because I believe it's universal law. Whatever you say is, and the universe will go, oh, okay, well, now you're going to live that. Now you're going to see evidence of it. And I would also tell people, you're not going to get this right minute one. This is first, it's like when you were learning to drive a car, you're paying attention to 10 different things. Look here, look at that, do this, do that. Then it becomes a way of living and being. And then it gets smoother and more seamless, but you've got to stay with it.
Mm-hmm. And speaking of books, you have some behind you. Are those influential for a specific reason?
Those are my books. I had my new book came out October of last year, Loving What's Next, What You Want Can Be Yours Now. And my other book, hashtag Soul Teach, is 365 days of energetically transmitted messages that speak to your soul and help you start making those shifts. So both of those books, Loving What's Next, I love because after 16 years of doing this work, a publisher asked me to write a book as if I'm taking a client through the process. So it has exercises and tools and all my teachings and trainings.
Oh, wow. How was that to write?
It was a great book to write. I loved it. It was that culmination of how I know to help people. And then Soul Teach really took off because I built the hashtag Soul Teach on social media for a few years, then turned it into a 365-day book. So it's been a really good both of them together. A lot of people get both of them together. And the soul teaches, like, you can either start at day one, it's not dated, and go all the way through for a year, or you can do that, flip the page, what's my message for today? And then loving what's next really takes you through the whole process. If you were working with me, all the different stages of it.
If you had to say a favorite stage of what this book looks like, is there a favorite stage for you? Like, this is when I feel like I see the most resonation with clients. Or do you have a favorite stage, or is the whole process for you just fulfilling?
It is the biggest aha. I've spoken on stages with it. I've really used it and owned it. If you can teach people the concept of taking inspired action, that's the biggest piece. Once people understand that, and the faster you take the inspired action, once you're inspired, going back to that Ho'oponopono I was telling you about, it believes that there are only two ways we receive information: data and divinity, which is inspiration. And the more we clear the mental and emotional clutter and data, the more we receive inspiration. And it is learning absolutely to take inspired, aligned action as soon as it comes in. And so that is my soapbox.
I love that. I just wrote that down. Data and divinity are two of the ways that we receive
Those are
inspiration.
the only two ways that we receive information. And when you remove the mental and emotional clutter, the data, and you learn to receive divinity, that's how you create the life you want to live.
Where, if you had to choose one of the places that you visited that has felt the most spiritual to you, what would that be?
One of the places that's very dear to me, I live there and work there in the summers, is Lilydale, which is a spiritual community in upstate New York near Niagara Falls. It has a lot of meaning for me. I went there for years, then I taught there, and then I moved there for part of the year. And it's a whole town. They open in the summer, they have a summer season, and they teach and speak. Deepak Chopra has spoken there, Lisa Williams, all of these great minds, and they teach spirituality, intuitive and healing arts, and it is built on a vortex. It's sacred land. So look up Lilydale because it's a truly magical healing place.
I have never heard of that. I definitely will check that out.
Yes, just go to look up Lilydale, New
So,
York.
what's next for you, do you think?
What is next for me? I was very excited. I took Loving What's Next to the Oscars and the Emmys this year, and I got to hand it out and get it in people's hands at the gifting lounges. And while I was at the Oscars, my publisher called and offered me my next book deal. So we're still working on this book, getting it out there. But I will net this, well, I was going to say next year, now it is 2025. The next book I'm writing is all of this about the relationships and the patterns, and being in relationship and healing all of that. So that is my next book. I'm going to bring in the family constellations and all of that. I'm very excited, and I'll start on it soon, and they'll probably release it end of this year or next year.
Wow, congratulations. So many things happening for you. 33 years, marriage, you have two books now, a thriving business. So,
And
what
here's
is,
something I'll tell you. This book, it's my fourth book, but it's my first book deal. When I was 9 years old, I told my parents, I need a New York publishing book deal. And I've been writing since I was a child. Then life went and all of that. But spirit never forgets your desires. And last year, I got a New York publishing book deal. I
wow.
manifested it when I was ready.
I was just going to ask you that for anyone who's a non-believer who to say, well, it took all of this time. Now you're experienced. What do you think there is to say about being ready for something that has one of your desires to come true?
Ready to be it, ready to become it. And also, the way it just works, even in the practical world, I could have written the book years ago, but I had no platform. Now I have a huge online platform, social media, a following. Now, I mean, you can write a book and it'll get out to 10 people in the world and never get out there. So spirit knows when it's ripe and ready, and sometimes your desires come around. It needed maximum impact, and now I have the platform for it. And now I speak on stages, and now I can get it out there.
That's amazing.
That's why it took
Congratulations.
longer. Plus, I had to become the person who could write this book.
I bet. That's one of my desires in life is to write. And I was similar to you. I was always writing short stories. I always had a diary or a notebook with me, cataloging everything about my life. So, what would you say is one of the things that you need in order to write a book that will be successful?
You want to plan. I found that people will sit and write their books for years. I wrote my first book in 90 days, my second book in 8 weeks, because I hired book coaches and I learned systems. And you've got to get the book written. It can't help anybody until you write it. And there are formulas and ways to do it. And you don't need to write one book. Most people have one book that's like three or four books. So you learn to write the book that gets in people's hands and helps them. And I've learned to do that, and I help people do that. So you've got to just write the book. Know why you're writing it, get whatever help you need, and then write the book and get it out there. I have some that are self-published, some published through coaches, and now I have a publisher.
That's amazing. I'm so happy for you.
But in this day and age, you've got to build a platform. You've got to build an online following and platform to get a book deal.
So, where can people find you? Speaking of your online platform.
People can find me at michellebarr.com, and I have free resources on there. I'm on all social media. I hang out on Facebook a lot. You can get my books on Amazon. You can get my books on my website.
Awesome. Well, this was amazing. Thank you so much for your time. I loved your energy and all of the things and tips that you had to say. It's amazing to hear about how much growth and success you've had in your business. I can't wait to get my hand on your books as well. I love the hashtag soul teach also. I think that's incredibly, I think it's really incredibly like a good look ahead at what people can think of when they think of finding your soul. There's always a lesson, and soul teach to me really encompasses that. That like really hit me as I saw it behind you. I was like, is that one of hers? So again,
Yes, you can put hashtag soul teach, especially into Facebook, but in all my social media, and you can pull up the teachings and just see what they are and get a daily dose of it. It's been a great conversation. You ask good questions. I've loved talking about all this. You can talk about it forever. So thank you for having me.
of course. Thank you so much for being here.